In June 2015, two vicious convicted murderers broke out of the Clinton Correctional Facility in Dannemora in New York's North Country, launching the most extensive manhunt in state history. Aided by prison employee Joyce Mitchell, double murderer Richard Matt and cop killer David Sweat slipped out of their cells, followed a network of tunnels and pipes under the 30-foot prison wall, and climbed out of a manhole to freedom. For 3 weeks, the residents of local communities were virtual prisoners in their own homes as law enforcement from across the nation swept the rural wilderness near the Canadian border. The manhunt made front-page headlines, of course, as did the prison sex scandal involving both inmates and Joyce Mitchell, and culminated in a dramatic and bloody standoff. Charles Gardner, a lifelong resident of the community and a former corrections officer who began his training at Clinton and ultimately oversaw the training of staff in 12 prisons, including Clinton, tells the story from an insider's point of view in his new book, Dannemora: Two Escape Killers, 3 Weeks of Terror, and the Largest Manhunt Ever in New York State. The book is fascinating, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Charles Gardner to Studio A this morning. Thank you very much for being here. Great pleasure.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's very nice to have you on the program. You look like a prison guard. You shake hands like a prison guard.
Oh, yeah, yes, we do.
You come by this honestly.
Yeah, there's nothing fake about me.
It's, no. Yeah. So, correct me if I'm wrong. In my reading of your book, I get the sense, some in more parts than others, but I get a sense that you were sitting back watching this and you felt that there were some wrongs that needed to be righted as far as the story that was being told to the general public. Is that a fair assumption?
That's absolutely, you've hit the nail right on the head.
Okay. So what was it, as you watch it, as I mentioned in the introduction, we're all kind of held hostage by this story. How far were you living from it when you were...
As the crow flies, front door of my house to the front door of Clinton Correctional, approximately 35 miles.
Okay, so very close to home. So you're feeling and knowing what you know about the procedures and what's probably going on there. What was your reaction? What were you thinking as all of this was happening over 3 weeks?
Like everyone else in the North Country, no matter where you were in proximity to the Clinton Correctional, you were going to be running into roadblocks within a matter of a few minutes. In our particular case, in Malone, we wouldn't have to go any more than probably 6-7 miles, and we would be going through roadblocks and road checks that would be manned by both law enforcement as well as correctional staff.
So what? Who screwed up? who screwed up here?
Well, there's plenty of blame to go around, but the bottom line is real simple. If you take Joyce Mitchell out of the formula, you don't have an escape.
Really? So, in the sense of, the way out, the fact that you can get to the manhole cover in the center of the town to make your escape. And that's even a viable option seems to lay blame elsewhere as well.
Absolutely. And again, but without Joyce Mitchell, without the introduction of the hacksaw blades,
yep.
And this was realistically the key tool, those inmates would have never breached the back of their cells. They would have never breached the pipe, the steam pipe that was heating that facility, to breach into the pipe, wiggle their way approximately 10 feet down that pipe, and then breach out of that pipe. You take those hacksaw blades out of the formula, and you do not have an escape that route.
Now, Bedford Hills is the women's prison where Joyce Mitchell is being held and where she is incarcerated, and you work there.
Correct.
So what do you know about that facility and the type of treatment that she has now?
Bedford Hills falls into the same category of any and all of New York State's correctional facilities. The inmates have a tremendous amount of privileges with regards to recreational activities, being able to watch television, play board games. The medical facilities are second to none. Optical, dental, beautiful libraries, beautiful law libraries. Basically, everything and anything that you would find in our civilization, you will find behind those 30-foot walls.
So I sense that you don't necessarily think that's the best way.
Oh, I don't have a problem with it at all, actually.
Okay.
No, I really don't. I don't, just because folks are incarcerated, I don't think that they should be making big rocks into little rocks by any means. No.
Okay, no. But the idea of, so let's get back to Joyce Mitchell.
Sure.
So she's at Dannemora, and her job, she's a seamstress. And so it seems the problem is the proximity and the relationship that she is allowed to have with these two inmates.
That would be the beginning of the end for Joyce Mitchell. Joyce Mitchell would come to work for an entity known as Corecraft. Corecraft is the entity that builds license plates, office furniture, soap, uniforms for both staff as well as inmates. In this particular case, Joyce worked for Corecraft, the industries that was building uniforms. And her career started in basically 08. Within approximately a year, year and a half, Joyce's co-workers were observing behaviors that were unbecoming, that were not appropriate for the workplace, and they were in contradiction with her training. So her own employees that she worked with, her own co-workers, tried to bring it to her attention, and then it got to the point where her supervisors would bring it to her attention as a result of a what was known as a verbal counseling.
So what it was... The relationship that she had with the inmates was, I mean, you've worked in a lot of prisons. I mean, how unusual was that relationship?
Very unusual. Correctional staff in New York State are highly trained. It's a set of standards that we've been held to for a very long time. It's a set of directives and standards that has been working for thousands of employees for a number of years. It's taxi-tested tough. Unfortunately, Joyce Mitchell disregarded her training and was going to do it her way. As I said, when she kind of started to come off the rails, her coworkers would talk to her, and then finally her supervisor would talk to her saying, Joyce, your behaviors are inappropriate. That didn't seem to set with Joyce, and her behaviors continued to escalate, and her conduct continued to get worse to the point where her supervisor finally had to document and put her on paper. Again, we had pushback from Joyce Mitchell. Joyce Mitchell would go to the facility's administration, the superintendent, and complain that she was being harassed by her employer and by her supervisors.
But of course, we cannot escape the, pardon the pun, cannot escape the blame here on the two prisoners who took advantage of the situation and this woman's position.
Absolutely. You look at the two inmates involved in this particular case, Richard Matt, master of manipulation. Richard Matt has survived his entire life manipulating people that he comes in contact with. David Sweat had the same characteristics, moral compass completely off course. Yeah, you had two cold-hearted killers here, but you also had two very highly intelligent individuals who are capable of seeing the weakness being Joyce Mitchell, and exploiting it.
How long were they in prison before they started to work on an escape?
This particular escape plot was probably in the neighborhood of, from what my research gave me, close to 2 years in the making. Joyce Mitchell wasn't corrupted, and she wasn't bringing in hacksaw blades on the first attempt to talk to these, when the inmates were talking with her. This manipulation took a very long, patient time. Joyce Mitchell would start her bringing in of contraband with something as simple as baked goods, cookies, donuts, brownies, escalate to bringing in a McDonald's sandwich, which is all completely against policy and procedure with New York State Department of Corrections. The inmates would look at that behavior and automatically know that this person right here is not going to follow directives. They're not going to follow policies and procedures.
So what's wrong with the system that allows that behavior to go on and not ultimately fire her?
The system was attempting to ratchet her back down. As I said, They started with They did the verbal counselings first,
yep.
Which is, if we have this type of behavior, this is not uncommon. We'll verbally counsel you first and say your behavior is unacceptable. We'll remind you that you have to look at your directives and figure out your policies and get back on page.
But over 2 years.
Correct. And she continued the behavior. So then they went to an actual write-up, a formal, and then they went so far as an actual, her yearly evaluations also showed the documentation. Understand, as I said earlier, she pushed back. She went to her administration at the facility and was screaming that she was being harassed. So now you've got Corecraft and the Department of Corrections trying to work it out. Meanwhile, Joyce Mitchell walks back into the tailor shop feeling emboldened and empowered. You can't touch me, and I'm going to do it my way.
What was, you write about this, but there was, they attempted this once, and then they failed. So what was how long between the first attempt and the second successful attempt?
With regards to the escape?
Yes.
Okay. So as a result of the Joyce Mitchell and the failure of her to conduct herself appropriately, Joyce Mitchell would smuggle into Clinton Correctional Facility hacksaw blades. From the day that Joyce Mitchell smuggled in the hacksaw blades to the day that Richard Matt and David Sweat escaped from the facility would be 133 days. In the book, there's actually two plots. The first plot, oh, wait a minute, Joe, I'm not going to tell you that. You got to read the book. I'm not going to make it that easy for you. But needless to say, the first plot wasn't working out. Joyce Mitchell actually brought in more escape tools, different types of tools, in the terms of security screwdriver bits, and Allen wrenches. And that plot failed. So then they went to the second plot, which resulted in the inmates finding their way through the subterranean tunnels.
When it comes to, so I just have to ask this question, but how do you get a hacksaw blade into a prison?
Well, let's give you the simple scenario. Clinton Correctional has approximately 1,000 uniformed staff members. Uniformed, I mean correction officers who wear the uniform, sergeants, supervisors, being lieutenants as well, captains, as well as your deputy security. There's 1,000 staff members that are uniformed. You have 350 civilian staff members, so you have 1,300 staff members. Those 1,300 staff members, as they come to work Monday through Sunday, 7 days a week operation for three shifts, are vetted by a single officer. One officer is tasked with the job to make sure that you're not bringing in or sneaking in Jeep parts to reassemble a Jeep on the inside of the facility, or that you haven't dismantled a Jeep and trying to sneak those parts out. One person is controlling, watching visitors coming and going and vetting them, as well as 1,300 staff members throughout the course of the week.
And that's a different person each time the employee enters and exits?
For the most part, it's out of in and out of one single gate,
yep,
that everyone enters into Clinton Correctional. And for the most part, it's a bid job. So in other words, that's the same person for the most part 5 days out of the week until they're either on vacation or the weekend comes and then a relief comes in.
So what were they missing as she was walking in with this stuff?
Well, again, going back to the fact that you had one person vetting,
yeah,
over 1,000 people every day coming and going throughout those different shifts. The process is they're to check the IDs to make sure that you are who you say you are. The process is to look in their lunch pails. The process is to get those people coming and going till they make their time for shift. And you and I both know no one shows up 2 hours early. So if we take that same principle that's utilized going in and out of New York State's maximum security prison, Clinton Correctional, and take that principle to the TSA when you go fly next time. How many people do you go through when you go through TSA?
Like a dozen.
There it is. And
yeah,
don't you feel a lot safer when you fly, when you have a dozen people that look at you and vet you appropriately before you climb on an airplane?
Yeah, I like it, especially when I'm treated like a criminal.
Me too. Me too. But I feel a lot safer when I'm on that airplane.
All absolutely. Right? So
that's my point.
Now, please tell me, sir, I hope you have good news for us, Charles, that if we were to go to the Clinton Correctional Facility now, that is different.
Yeah. There's your answer.
Is his mic on?
Yeah.
Still one person.
You got it.
All right.
You
well,
got it.
So,
kind of scary, isn't it?
You know, so what? Now, for those of you, for your brethren, for fellow correction officers, I'm assuming you're screaming and yelling about this along the way.
It's frustrating, but this is why an insider like myself wrote this book, is because people like you, Joe, unfortunately don't know this.
Well, a lot of stuff I don't know, Joe.
Well, I know, and I and you and me both, but please understand, we made the analogy between TSA. I don't feel like a criminal when I get on an airplane. I feel safe. It's frustrating to think that one person has to vet all those people coming and going out of a correctional facility. Unfortunately, that hasn't changed any.
You know, I think of it, and this is just in my world, so I'll tell you a little bit how probably your day is different than mine. But, like, if I go to see a show, if I go down to New York and you go see a Broadway show, you walk in and they have security. And what does that mean? Well, if you have a bag or something, somebody walks in and they take a stick and a flashlight, and they open the stick, opens the bag that you have, a knapsack or whatever, backpack, and they open it up, and then they look down, and they flash the light, and then they look in your eye, and then you're gone.
Yeah.
So that's basically what was going on there.
For the most part, you were lucky if they were getting that deep. Again, understand, you have hundreds of people coming and going.
Okay.
That's the pathetic part of this.
Now, we have less than 2 minutes. So what do we learn from this, and how do we prevent it from ever happening again?
So what the Department of Correction has done, they're affectionately referred to as Tilly Toads. They're see-through. So in other words, every staff member that comes and goes from correctional facilities now bring in what's affectionately referred to as a Tilly Tote, a see-through bag. So for females, there are no secrets what's in your purse because it's a see-through purse. For anyone else entering facilities, we know what you're going to have for lunch and any kind of beverages that are also contained in there because it's a see-through container. That's the only change that's been made so far. Staffing levels have not changed.
Will they? I mean, if there's a wake-up,
No, they're not going to change.
Okay.
It's a concept of do more with less, and if it fails, it fails, unfortunately. And that's your front door of your facilities.
Is this facilities across the country and not just in New York?
This is New York. I can't speak for across the country. I have visited.
Yeah, but you all talk.
We do. We do. I don't want to give them any ideas, but across the country, as close as New Jersey, you can't bring in a beverage that's like a Coca-Cola. Anything that's dark that they can't see through the container are not allowed. And all containers going in those facilities have to be sealed. If you want to purchase a dark-colored container of, let's say, Coca-Cola or Pepsi product or Coke product, you have to purchase them inside the facility.
Well, it is. It's a fascinating. There's so much I didn't get to. Just the fact that Dannemora was built by prisoners itself is fascinating. The book is Dannemora: Two Escape Killers, 3 Weeks of Terror, and the Largest Manhunt Ever in New York State. It is published by Citadel Press. Charles Gardner, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Joe, thank you. There's a lot more material in there. Anywhere books are sold, enjoy
Absolutely.
Your read. Thank
Absolutely.
you.
Charles Gardner, again, author of Dannemora. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.